Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. Davos 2022 started yesterday. So I want to go over what is happening there and what the global elite are saying for a lot of different reasons. I know that we talk about freedom and liberty and free market capitalism on this channel, but as far as from a financial standpoint, you have to understand what's going on with the global elite. If you think that you can just invest in your 401k and buy some bonds and maybe some real estate and you don't have to worry about anything else, you are lying to yourself. That's just you trying to rationalize things so you don't have to do the homework required to make prudent decisions for your financial future. So if you want to call it that, whistling by the graveyard, whatever it is, if you want to increase or maintain your purchasing power, I'm not even talking about the personal freedom and liberty stuff. If you want to increase or maintain your purchasing power, you have to be aware of the agendas that are being pushed explicitly by the global elite, the people that go to this Davos forum. Now, I'm not just talking about the World Economic Forum, the IMF. You guys know that. I'm talking about all these corporate CEOs. I'm talking about the heads of these states, of these countries that are just cozy. I just say not cozy is not even the right word. That are, I think, under the influence of they're all getting together and coming to the same conclusions. They're taking the same script. They're using the same narrative, and I do not think it's for the benefit of the average Joe and Jane. I can tell you that right now. So let's dive into this here, but understand that this isn't just understanding these things and understanding this agenda and understanding what their narrative and their who is influencing who and what their motivation is and what their objectives are. It's not just about personal freedom and liberty. It's about your financial freedom moving forward. If you're an investor and you're not paying attention to this, you're going to have some big problems in the near future. But let's dive into it. So cooperation, and this is from the World Economic Forum's website. Oh, we could watch live. That might be, I'm sure that would be fun. So cooperation, surveys the sickness and connections, day one at the Davos Agenda 2022. And I like how I always use the word agenda and people label me a conspiracy theorist. Or they tell me to stay in my lane with economics. You don't know anything about this. Stay in your lane. Okay. Well, it's I'm just repeating what they are calling it. It's the Davos Agenda 2022. That's not why. You want to get pissed off at someone, get pissed off at Klaus. Don't get pissed off at me. I'm just saying what he is calling it or what they're explicitly saying here. So let's go through. We can see kind of their key talking points. The first day at Davos, we heard from Xi Jinping, president of China. Modi, who is the president, prime minister, whatever you want to call him, of India. The Antonio Guterres. If you don't know who Antonio Guterres is, he is the brainchild that has been pushing for the digital SDR, among many other things. And he wants to move away from the U.S. being the global reserve currency. And he thinks that the best option would be a digital SDR. So what that means is the IMF would be the ultimate bank. So people want to talk about a one world bank or a one world currency, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's whether that's a conspiracy theory or not, I'll let you be the judge. But the bottom line is that's what they want. They want a digital SDR to be the global, we'll call it base money. And they want the IMF to control that. That's what they want. So the next talking point here is inequality regarding the Cerveza sickness. Global collaboration was central to many discussions, as was the next stage of the Cerveza sickness and the medicines. On the first day, Xi Jinping, the president of people. Okay, we talked about that. So let's scroll down here. And here you can watch the video of Xi Jinping addressing It's all staged. It's all just right off a script. It's all plastic. It's all phony. It's all just as unauthentic as you could possibly get, which is, you know, it's so obvious that they're just reading right off a script or a teleprompter. And these are prepared remarks. And this has nothing to do with their opinion or what they will do. It's hard for me to believe that the media just hangs on their every word as though they are speaking with integrity, or as though they are communicating their true intentions or what they really believe. Give me a break. So we talk about the global effort for the medicine. And what I'm noticing as I'm reading these articles on what's happening here is they're treating the medicine as though once you get a certain number of them, trying to keep it YouTube friendly, that you're just good to go, that you're good. Once you've had that, then for the rest of your life, you're good. You don't need to worry about it. And it just flies in the face of all the data that we've seen, that even if you do get a level of, we'll call it protection against a severe case, it only lasts for a few months. And as far as J&J, that lasts about 2 months. So they're talking about it like it lasts 20 years. It just goes to show you how disingenuous this is. We've got Richard Hatchett, which co-leads, you guys can see what he co-leads, as part of the WHO, said support will be vital in helping countries build mass programs. And is it any surprise that this person spoke at the first day of the Davos Agenda 2022, hosted by the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab? If you can't see who this person is, we'll just call him Voldemort. So this video doesn't get taken down. And then we had Modi, the person that basically banned $100 bills, killing potentially millions of people in the process through just starvation and among other things, stressed that multilateral organizations must be capable of tackling today's challenges. I don't even know what that means. I don't think he knows what it means. It's just some BS that popped up on the teleprompter. So he repeated it because he is under the influence, or is cronies with Klaus and the global elite. And he wants to not only stay in power, he wants to increase his power and control. And here we have our buddy Antonio. Not sure what he's talking about, but I'm sure it has something to do with giving more power to the IMF. He says something to the effect whether in response to the Cerveza sickness told special address that there's been global inability to support developing countries in their hour of need. Oh, boy. Oh, here's our boy, Antonio, our buddy. So let's go through what he's really talking. I don't need to even watch this, although I might later. Actually, let's turn this on right here, because I just want you guys to see how the lack of authenticity in these people here. Let's see if we can play this.
We need to reform the global financial system in a way that it can work for all countries without being biased. At this critical moment, we are setting in stone a lopsided recovery. More than 8 out of 10 recovery dollars are being spent in developed countries. Low-income countries are at a huge disadvantage. They are experiencing their slowest growth in a generation and trying to dig themselves out with woefully insufficient national budgets. The burdens of record inflation, shrinking fiscal space, high interest rates, and they will be higher, and soaring energy and food prices are hitting every corner of the world and blocking recovery, especially in low and some middle-income countries.
So if you guys have never, if you're new to the channel, or maybe new to the George Gammon channel, and you haven't heard me talk about these things on a whiteboard or maybe one of these live streams, now you see what I'm saying? You think that that was just spur of the moment, just right off the top of his head? You can literally see the guy reading. And what is he saying? What's his point? It's very difficult to really understand what their message really is because they just talk in circles. And it's amazing how much they can talk but yet not say anything, if you know what I mean. Really, the objective, he's talking about all these. So how do they do that? Okay, well, the IMF comes in and gives all of these dollar loans to these emerging markets. Okay, well, they are the lender of last resort. So all of the, it's not just the IMF, it's first and foremost the banks in the euro dollar banking system. So these countries, emerging markets, load up on dollar denominated debt. The corporations within the countries, sometimes the countries themselves. And then what happens as the dollar goes up? Well, it becomes harder for them to pay back or to pay their monthly payments on the dollar denominated debt. So what happens is they try to roll that over to buy some time if they can't pay it off. And then they have to go back to the marketplace to try to get banks to lend them money. And if banks won't lend them the dollars they need, what do? They have to go to the lender of last resort. Who is that? The Fed? No, not if you're Columbia, not if you're XYZ corporation in, let's just say Argentina or something like that. You have got to go to the IMF. And then the IMF does what? Prior to them even going to the IMF, I think the IMF would come to them and let them know that, hey, we are the lender of last resort. We know that you have a huge amount of dollar-denominated debt. We know that you are going to be in an economic bind coming up. So we're going to give you a couple different options. Number one is we will gladly give you the dollar funding that you need, assuming you're going to have to roll over your debt because your dollar cash flow is being reduced because of a global economic shutdown, let's say, maybe because of some thing called the Cerveza sickness or the government's response to it. And so if you need to roll over that debt, sure, you can come to us. We'll give you the dollars you need, but there's going to be conditions. What you'll need to do is jump through this hoop, and this hoop. And this hoop involves, I don't know, something like maybe a medicine mandate, maybe a lockdown. Maybe you need to have more restrictions on people, maybe emissions, carbon emissions. And you need to jump through all these hoops. And from the outside looking in, as someone like yourself watching this video that has common sense and understands a bit of economics, you look at countries that are doing that, you say, why on earth? They're destroying their economy. Even if there is a small health benefit, the cost far exceeds the benefit. Why would they do this? Because the IMF is the lender of last resort. And they've got a choice. Either they can play by their rules. That's option number one. Or option number two, the IMF, say, unfortunately, we're not going to, in the future, be able to give you that dollar liquidity you need. And then the president or the country looks around and says, okay, well, that's not an option because then my entire economy collapses. So option number one is you play by their rules and you crush your economy, let's say 10 or 15%. Option number two is you don't play by their rules and your economy gets crushed by 50%. This is the leverage that the IMF has. And what this guy is saying is he wants the IMF to have even more leverage. He's saying that look at all these poor developing countries. The IMF needs to come in and help these countries. We need to do better. We need to have global support for the IMF coming in and giving them the dollar liquidity they need. And oh, by the way, US, you should go ahead and raise your interest rates. Why would the IMF suggest, like Mr. Guterres, why would he want the Fed to raise interest rates? Because that increases the interest rates on all the dollar loans that will be given in the future. What does that do? That makes the position of all these emerging market countries even more difficult, which makes them more dependent on the IMF in the future. That's what Mr. Guterres is all about. So then challenges remain in response to the Cerveza sickness. Another presentation from Voldemort. I'm not sure. Another presentation from our boy. I mean, this is, it's so difficult to watch.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
And let's get to the, let's cut to the chase here. Let's go to everyone's favorite Klaus Minimi, Benioff. And this is not from this year. I believe this is from a year or two ago. But this really helps you understand their whole worldview. This is it in a nutshell. It's that we are smart, you are stupid. Therefore, we should have all the power and control, and you should obey us. That I can tell you what the 2022 agenda is. I can tell you what the 2023 agenda is. I can tell you what the agenda is for the next 50 years for Davos. It's just that. You're stupid. We're smart. Give us the power and control and obey us. Done. That's the agenda for the next 50 years. So if you need further proof of that, let's listen to possibly my least favorite human being on the face of the earth currently, Mark Benioff.
What do you mean?
Well, people have been asking me, why am I working?
So you made a lot of headlines when you said capitalism as we know it is dead. What do you mean?
Well, people have been asking me, why am I wearing this black suit and black
you're in mourning
tie? Because I'm at a funeral for capitalism here in Davos, Sarah.
Just hilarious. I didn't know Benioff was a comedian as well. Think about saying that out loud. You've got capitalism, free market capitalism, something that has helped more people come out of poverty than anything in human history. And he's cracking jokes about being at its funeral. I'm trying to take the high road here and not just use, I don't want to call him names. I don't want to disparage him any more than he disparages himself. So just trying to take the high road here.
What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, capitalism is dead.
You know you have a public company, right?
Well, you know that capitalism is dead and we are introducing a new capitalism here, a stakeholder capitalism, which is a more sustainable capitalism, a more equitable capitalism, a more fair, a more just capitalism. And it's not like the old capitalism, you know, is all about Milton Friedman, the business of business.
Here's the telltale sign that he is so close to Klaus. Who is Klaus's public enemy number one? Milton Friedman. Klaus hates Milton Friedman. Read his writing. He cannot stand Milton Friedman. He throws him under the bus at every opportunity. Why is that? Why is it they hate Milton Friedman so much? Why is it that Benioff just parrots this drivel from Klaus when they're referring to Milton Friedman? Because Milton Friedman in the 1970s, let's remember Klaus started the World Economic Forum in 1971. He smashed Klaus's ideas, smashed them. He completely destroyed his ideas. And my guess is that Klaus didn't take too favorably to that. So now to this day, I mean, we're talking about what, 30, 40 years later, in my opinion, Klaus has still got a grudge against Friedman. That's still his boogeyman. I would assume that you just mention his name and Klaus has a visceral reaction, right? So what I intend to do, because Helmet Head here is just repeating Klaus's garbage narrative for, let's be honest, it's corporatism, it's a technocracy, and it's really, at the end of the day, economic fascism, where there's, and what they call it is a public-private partnership, right? That's corporatism. So Benioff, you know what Benioff is like? He's like that Benedict Arnold character that you see in the movies. They see Darth Vader, and they think that he's got so much power that he's going to control the universe or the galaxy or whatever it was in Star Wars. And so they defect from the good guys to the bad guys because they think that the bad guys are going to rule the world in the future. That's Benioff. That's Benioff right there. He's a Benedict Arnold. He's defected. He's gone over to the dark side, if you will, because he thinks the dark side is going to rule the world in the future, and he wants to get in good now. So let's go through stakeholder capitalism. What he's saying is that he thinks that corporations should take their profits and basically spend it on charity, help the planet, help carbon emissions, you name it, right? Well, who gets to decide where those profits are spent? Oh, well, that would be Benioff. That would be the heads of these corporations. And if there's a public-private partnership, that means the politicians are involved. And who controls the politicians? The global elite in the World Economic Forum, right? So let's just think this through. If he took the profits and distributed them to shareholders in typical shareholder capitalism that Milton Friedman would be a proponent of, what would happen? Well, let's remember, what is a corporation? Is it this dark, mysterious entity that we should all fear? No, at the end of the day, a corporation is nothing but people. Shareholders, they're nothing but people. So now they could be good people, they could be bad people, but they're still people at the end of the day. So what Benioff is saying is that he wants to take profits, and instead of distributing those profits to the shareholders, the teachers, the police officers, the firefighters, the average Joe and Jane that has shares of Salesforce in their 401k, their pension fund, etc., instead of giving them the profits and letting them decide how they want to spend the money, maybe they want to spend it on fighting global warming. Maybe they want to spend it on some other cause that they are passionate about. But what Benioff says is, I'm not going to give you the ability to do that because I'm going to take all that money and I'm going to spend it on what I think is right. Well, what does that do for Benioff? You think that doesn't give him a lot of political pull? He spends hundreds of millions of dollars of shareholder money in the name of stakeholder capitalism. Why? Because it gives him pull. It gives him political pull and power. I mean, think about it. Who do you think has more political pull, Benioff or you? Why? Why do you think Benioff has more political pull? Do you think it's because he's just has a fat head and is a snake oil salesman? You think that's why he has more political power? No, it's because he's given away hundreds of millions of dollars, and the politicians know this. So he is trading shareholder money for political pull in the name of virtue, in the name of altruism, in the name of global warming. You see, this is stakeholder capitalism. The reason these people like Benioff are pushing it is because they know that it gives them cover to steal what is rightfully shareholders, police officers, teachers, and firefighters, steal from them to buy political favors and political pull. That's all this is. And it's absolutely disgusting. And I cannot believe that people can't see through this garbage.
Business is business, money, money, money. And the new capitalism is, the new stakeholder capitalism is, business is the greatest platform for change.
And I've heard that before.
You have heard it before.
You know, really, you've been out front on this issue. And yes. It seems like everybody else.
It's why I started my company 21 years ago.
I guess my question is, you know, traditionally Wall Street and analysts and investors reward share buybacks, cutting costs, layoffs, needing guidance. I mean, these are all sort of short-term thinking. It goes against your long-term thinking. So how do you marry that and see this paradigm?
This is so naive. I can't believe the ignorance of this person asking the questions. It again, it's this view that the corporation is some sort of abstract entity that just sucks up all the money and it just stays in this corporation, right? Or that all the money goes to one person or two or three people. No, the money that's going into the corporation is going out to the average Joe and Jane. So when she's saying all the shareholders, as though, you know what that's like? That's like when the people die in war. It's not saying that, you know, 100 Americans died today. It's 100 troops died today. But why do they say troops? Because it makes it sound better. So if she was really being honest, she would say, well, all of the teachers, all of the average Joe and Janes with 401ks, they want you to give them the money. Why aren't you doing that? This is an honest discussion, or this would be an honest discussion.
Paradigm shift play out in the market.
Well, we went public in 2004. I think that's when I was first on CNBC. And since then, we've had a 4,000% return.
Why is that, Benioff? I wonder if that was because of the Fed. I don't know. In fact, what I can do right here is I can pull up your share price and go back to 2004. It's at a whopping $8. And now it's at $230. Wow. I wonder if this would mimic the Fed's balance sheet identically. So let's get off your high horse here, my friend, and stop insinuating that it's actually you, when in reality, it's your central planner buddies at the Fed.
For our shareholders, they've done just fine. But we've also given away $300 million.
You've given away $300 million that you've stolen from teachers, firefighters, and police officers in order for you to buy political favors and pull.
Part of our stakeholder return. We also made sure we're a net zero company, because the planet is a stakeholder. We also have adopted 170 public schools because our public schools are stakeholders. We make sure that we pay.
Yes, so you can brainwash the kids as they're growing up to believe in your bullshit.
Men and women equally for equal work, because our female employees are stakeholders. So we have a great shareholder return.
And that's the ultimate. Whenever they start talking about the discrepancy in female and male pay, you know that you are listening to straight propaganda. This is something that has been debunked over and over and over and over and over again. If these capitalists are so greedy and have this insatiable lust for power, and if they can pay women 70 cents on the dollar, why would they hire men? The answer is they wouldn't. So, and just study Thomas Sowell's work on this. I honestly, guys, I can't deal with this. I can't deal with any more of this. So I'm just, I've got to, just for my pure levels of stress, you can go ahead and research the rest. That's what's going on with Davos. That's their whole push. It's corporatism. It's so they can dominate the world and control the global economy. And they can do that through controlling the politicians and controlling these CEOs like Benioff and all the other Klaus Mini-Me disciples that are running around out there. Always stand up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. We'll see you on the next video.